I know, like, less than 2 weeks is Thanksgiving. Where'd the year go? That's, man. Oh, that's, we had, where Kimberly and I are, and the kids used to live, they had this private school just down the road from us. And we're, the county that we lived was kind of cut off from everything else. You had, there's no stopping by our house wherever we used to live. In order to get to our place, you have to try and get to our place. Some of you live in a place like that. Like, there's, you don't live on the way to anywhere. You are the way that people are going. So this county in Maryland, when people would, we would say, they would say, where are you from? And we would say, Maryland. They say, oh, which part? And we would always say, don't worry about it. You know, you wouldn't have been there. You wouldn't have stopped by or anything unless you planned on getting there. So over the years, it would seem like that everybody who lived there kind of felt like trapped. You know, there's really no way out. There's one way in and one way out, and nobody was taking that way out. And so you kind of sit there. There was a small private school that was in this county, and a lot of the kids would, and the public schools there weren't good. In fact, I think they're some of the worst in the United States. And so these kids would try to go to this private school, and I noticed that on their social media, the kids that were accepted to the private school, they would get their picture, you know, with their acceptance letter, and they would have this caption. And the caption would say, I finally made it. That was it. And I remember reading that caption and thinking, these kids need bigger dreams. You know, you're 14 years old, you're going to this school, and your thought process is, I finally made it. Made it to what? And I thought it was kind of sad, you know, that the dreams don't exceed going to this school. Like, if you made it at 14, you know, the rest of your life, I guess, is just fell off a cliff. Like, you got nothing else to look forward to. And I thought, man, these parents really need to start helping these kids to see bigger and better. And then I thought, maybe I'm blowing it up. Oh, no. Then I saw the parents posting. They were with their kids. And the parents would post this caption. He finally made it, y'all. And I thought, well, even the parents are bought into it. You know, that even they can't dream. And even one mom said, he finally achieved his dream. Nothing else matters after this. He's 14. Like, a license, maybe? I don't know. But then I began to look around the county, and I come to find out 91% of all 16 and 17-year-olds in our county don't have licenses. They just ride a bike. Not Davidson. We're still in Maryland, so try to keep up. And I began to notice just over and over these little things kept popping up. And what I began to see is that there wasn't a lot of ambition. There wasn't a lot of trying anymore. There wasn't a lot of dreaming anymore. And I thought, it's a sad place when we can't dream anymore. It's a sad place when we can't see beyond what's right in front of us. And I used to think it was just this spot in Maryland, but I'm beginning to think that it's really all of us. We all get trapped. We all start to see what's right in front of us, and we can't see anything beyond that. It's like it just crowds out everything. If you're visiting with us, we've been almost the entire year in the book of Matthew. We've had over 32 lessons from the Gospel of Matthew. If you have your Bibles, I hope you'll turn there. And we're nearing the end. And ever since Matthew chapter 21, Jesus has been on this mission to expose some of our thought processes that aren't exactly right. Now, he's been telling us parables, and he's been having teachings and healing people. But when you get to Matthew 21 and he walks into where the temple is, he started telling these parables. Started making people upset. Talked about taxes last week, but really it wasn't about taxes. It was about my problems. And over, Jesus begins to expose things that we all believe that we didn't know we believed. But there are things that trap us. By the time we get to Matthew 24, this entire chapter is dedicated to overcoming the things that hold us back. And if you read too quickly, you'll miss it. Look at chapter 24. Verses 1 and 2. Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came up to him, and they called his attention to the buildings. Do you see all of these things? He asked. I tell you the truth, not one stone here will be left on another. Everything will be thrown down. In Mark 13, in Mark's version of the story, the disciples say, look at the magnificent buildings. In Luke 21, the disciples say that they marveled at the gifts of the temple. Church, we are easily impressed and persuaded by the things of this earth. those shiny things, those big things, those promotional things. And I know we are because I've talked to a lot of you, and as I'm talking with you, your phone dings and you pull it out and look at it. You know, if I need to get your attention, I'll just ding you. And that's how you get your attention. We are easily impressed and persuaded by the things of this earth. And I think Jesus wants to call attention to that. Jesus says, you see all these stones? They're not going to be here no more. Whatever impressive house you've been to lately will no longer be here when Jesus comes back. It's gone. So anything that we are impressed by, don't be too impressed by it. Here's the second thing. We are easily upset and distracted by the things we don't know. You'll see how both of those fit. We see shiny things and we're so impressed. And then when we can't see it, it just ruins our whole life. Look at verse 3. As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. Tell us, they said, when will this happen? What will be the sign of your coming? And what will be the end of the age? How? When? Why? Y'all ever ask those questions? How many of you have anxiety because the doctor don't want to tell you today? He wants you to wait till next week that he can give you your test results. And it ruins your whole week, doesn't it? Just sit on it for days and days because we are so concerned with the how and the when and the why. And the disciples say, when's this going to happen? How's it going to happen? Well, in what state is it going to happen? And Jesus really doesn't have any answers. And then I'm going to tell you what we do. We take the things we don't know and we take what little we do know and we try to make our own answers. And they are the most ridiculous answers in the world. We take a little bit of knowledge that we have, and I know what's going to happen. This is going to happen. And we are totally wrong. I predicted yesterday that Kentucky would beat Tennessee. I was obviously wrong. Totally wrong. I had a little bit of information because I don't watch Tennessee. And so I made this prediction because I was watching Kentucky. Absolutely wrong. And I think, well, it's just football. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. Do you know how many times I have made a judgment about a person with a limited amount of information? Because I thought I knew, you know, I've encountered this kind of person before, and so I know what they're going to do. How many times have you been right? America, we call that profiling. We call that prejudice. It's what we do. We see something, I got a little bit of information, and I'm making the call. The disciples want to know all the little details so we can make the call. And Jesus is not about to give them any details. And then I think it ends up hurting us because we try to get the answers ourselves. Go backwards. Go to Matthew chapter 22. Let me show you a ridiculous story. Matthew 22. Matthew 22. Look at verse 23. The Sadducees have a limited amount of information. They got a big topic, and so they come up with their own scenario. Look, verse 23. Here we go. That same day, the Sadducees, who, by the way, say there's no resurrection, came to him with a question. They said, "Teacher, Moses told us," you got to pay attention now because they move fast. "Moses told us if a man dies without having kids, his brother has to marry the widow and have children for them." Now, just so we're all caught up, this is in the Old Testament. So if your wife dies, your brother has to marry her. Some of you are making this face. This ain't 2019, okay? This is way back when, all right? And this is actually good for the woman because otherwise she ain't got no property, she got no money, she has no inheritance. She's cooked. She's stuck, all right? And so God put this provision in the law to protect her. If her husband dies, where'd the estate go? Because women can't own property back then. Sorry, ladies. Women can't own it. And so if the brother marries her and then they have kids, stay with me, then the estate can continue and she can be taken care of. That sounds like a pretty good idea. I'm not saying still now, but back then that's all we got. So we're going with it, okay? That's in the law. We got that part. Now watch what they do with it. It's a good law. Watch what they do with it. Verse 25. "Now then, there were seven brothers among us. The first one married and he died. Since he had no children, he left his wife to his brother. Same thing happened to the second and the third brother, right on down to the seventh. Finally, the woman died." Verse 28. "Now, at the resurrection, whose wife will she be of the seven, since all of them were married to her?" Suppose there's seven of us. Let's say that Snow White married Doc. And then Doc died. They didn't have any kids, and so she married Dopey. Dopey died, and so she married Sneezy. Sneezy died, and so I'm running out of dwarves. Happy, grumpy. You get the point? Now I'm making that up. I'm trying to be funny, but that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. They're making fun of it. You know, so let me get... So by the time they get done, when the resurrection happens, is she Doc's wife or Dopey's wife? I mean, you see how ridiculous this sounds? I mean, I know we all want to believe in the resurrection, but let's be honest here. The resurrection really doesn't make any sense. This is what we do. We have a limited amount of information. We try to make sense of it, and we look like fools. This morning, Jesus wants to expose all of our false beliefs. And he wants us to see how ridiculous we look. And unfortunately, it's not just ridiculous, it's sad. If you go back to Matthew 24, Jesus wants us to know that none of us knows how this will end. Look at verse 36. This is the verse that Ryder began with. No one knows about that day or the hour, not even the angels of heaven, not even the Son, only the Father. None of us know. The disciples said, when's it going to happen? How's it going to happen? And Jesus says, we don't know. We don't know. Now, let's not just talk about the last day. How's this going to work out? You going to get that promotion? You going to get your retirement benefit? Are they going to take your benefits again? How's it going to work out with your son or with your mother or with your grandchild? How's all this going to work out? Jesus says, no one knows. Even I don't know. Only the Father knows. So in other words, if you have any idea about figuring out how it's all going to work out, give it up. You're not going to figure it out. You'll never know. And so if it's causing you stress, we got to get bigger dreams. We got to find some other things. Here's the second one. Not only do none of us know how this is going to end up, but none of us get to control what happens. Let me say that again for effect. None of us get to control what happens. A lot of you are doing this. That's fine. Yet, those of you who are doing this think when it comes to your kids, you can control them. You cannot. Some of you think you can control your spouse. If you haven't figured that out, see me afterwards. Some of you think you can control the weather. Even the meteorologists get it wrong less than half the time. I mean, it's there's not much, church, we can control. Look at chapter 24. Look at verses 4 through 8. These are powerful verses. Jesus says, watch out that nobody deceives you. Many will come in my name. They'll say, I'm the Messiah. And they will deceive many people. Verse 6. You're going to hear about wars and rumors of wars. But see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen. And the end is still to come. Nation's going to rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There's going to be famines and earthquakes in various places. And all these things are just the beginning. Hurricanes are going to do what hurricanes do. Dead cells in your body are going to do what dead cells do in your body. If it's raining heavily, it's going to flood. Does anybody else have an iPhone and the thing just goes off at some random time to tell you that there's floods in your area? Like at 3 a.m. and wakes you up with that blasting weather thing? They make that noise to wake you up, to put you in a panic. I'm serious. That's why they make that noise like that. It's not a pleasant, you know, it's flooding. No, there's none of that, okay? It's a very harsh, high-pitched, you know, weather thing. And every time it does it, every time it tells me there's a flood warning, it's been raining for 3 hours. And I look at it and I say, well, duh. If it's raining heavy, of course it's flooding. Of course I get a flood warning. You know, this is what rains do. And I think there are probably some people who look at their phones and say, oh, it's going to flood? Have you been living under a rock? You know, rains are going to do what rains do. Hurricanes are going to do what hurricanes do. Church, hairlines are going to do what hairlines do. They're going to run. They're going to retreat. And then some of us are shocked. I can't believe I'm losing my hair. Are you over the age of 5? Then your hairline's running. You know, I'm sorry. And some of you are, Maybe not for you because you're hiding it better. But at the end of the day, human bodies are going to do what human bodies are going to do. Hey, dogs are going to do what dogs do. I used to get mad at my dog because he barked. He barked. Don't be surprised when your boss ships your job to China. I've heard some of you say, I can't believe I lost my job. I've got a wife and I've got kids. So what? He has investors. I've heard people say, I can't believe I lost my job. And I'm thinking, I can't believe that you can't believe that. Your employer is going to make money. That's why he's in the business of making money. And if making money means he sent your jobs overseas, he sent your job overseas. He doesn't care that I have a family. I don't know what planet you're on. Hurricanes are going to do what hurricanes do. Life happens. Jesus says you're going to hear rumors. Nations going to rise against nations. And please don't say, oh my goodness, what are we going to do? Hey, it's what nations do. We go to war. And a lot of us are shocked, but really we shouldn't be. You should have already known this. Teenagers are going to do what teenagers do. And some of us are still shocked. I've heard some of us say, where did I go wrong? What did I do to deserve this? I didn't raise them that way. I got news for you. It's not about you. What teenagers do, they don't do because they want to get back at you. Do you know why they do that? Because they're teenagers. We all used to be one. And we all used to act like that. I got to sit in a meeting with the director of Homeland Security in Tennessee. And he gave a 45-minute speech. It was the most interesting speech I have ever heard in my life. And the speech was on social media, computers, and teenagers. And he showed us what the teenagers can do. And all of our mouths were dropped. And it was the best line he had. He said, to all of you parents who think you have control of your child's phone or social media, you ain't nothing but a prison warden. And when you leave their cell at night, they go back to making their shanks. And I looked around and some of those moms were, and the guy said, to those of you who were shocked, you ain't lived long enough. And I know some of us are still kind of shocked. I know some of us think, not my child. I know some of us think that really can't be mine. But at the end of the day, things happen in our families and in our lives, and you can't control them. And for those of you who haven't learned that, I think I'll say what he said. You haven't lived long enough. Those of you who think you have control over everything, you do not. And Jesus says, if you hear rumors, ain't nothing you can do about it. Matter of fact, it's just the beginning of the birth pains. And some of you have experienced that. It's just the beginning. You have wanted it to be over. We're a long way from that. I don't mean this to sound like a Debbie Downer kind of thing, but I think a lot of us, either we're not dreaming big enough, or really the dreams are really inflated with false air. You see both sides? And it's really what Jesus is pushing at from both ends. We have two big problems. I learned about a year ago the acronym HLHS. I'd never heard of it before last year. And stands for hypoplastic left heart syndrome. Hypoplastic left heart syndrome. It was last Christmas. It was right before Christmas. And one of our members here had, her husband was in the hospital. And I was there with her and one of our elders, and he was going into surgery, and I had stayed with him. And so I left and actually went to another part of the hospital just to read because it's quiet. Well, it was supposed to be quiet. So I went to another part and ended up sitting in this waiting room, but then I ended up being with some other people in the waiting room. And the guy sitting next to me was an older gentleman, looked to be in his 60s, older than me, in his 60s. And he was sitting with me, and I started to ask him, you know, what he did, because I can, you know, because I have to talk to everybody. And I started to ask him, and come to find out, he's a surgeon. He's a heart surgeon. And I said, well, shouldn't you be in there? And he works in the West Coast. And I was like, well, okay. So started to talk to him some more, and He said, I had to take off. He said, my son is here. And his wife, and they just had a baby. He said, it's our first grandchild. And he was happy about it and smiling about it. And I said, well, what's wrong with your son? He said, it's not my son, it's my grandson. And that's where I found out that acronym, HLHS, hypoplastic left heart syndrome. This congenital heart defect in the children that's critical. And this heart doctor starts to talk to me about the left ventricles and mitral valves and aortic valves. And, he's halfway through and I'm thinking, I don't understand anything what he's saying. But he's talking to me about, the whole process. And this is, his grandson is going to have to go through this slew of surgeries. And he's telling me all the things that these doctors need to do. And he's going through it. And I'm thinking, wow. And his son comes out. And his son talks to his dad. And his son is visibly upset. And he's talking about the child. And the child's having trouble breathing. And the child's just not doing well. And they're trying to get into surgery. But the doctors don't know if the child will be able to go into surgery. And the guy I'm with is just firing off questions, like a doctor, just boom, are they doing this? Are they doing this? Are they doing this? And finally the son says, Dad, I don't know. I don't know. And the grandfather says, well, ask him, ask, and he starts writing out a list and the son says, Dad, I got to go back in there and leaves. The dad just watches the son go back in. And I looked at the guy and the guy looks at me and I said, I bet it's times like this you wish you were back there in the OR. And he said, I do. But I don't wish I was the doctor. I wish I could take the place of my son. And it dawned on me. It dawned on me. All the times, we think there's trouble with us, and the worst is when it's our kids. And I thought you grandparents were exempt. And it was at that moment I realized I think the grandparents have it the worst. Not worse than the victim, but we take it the worst. Not only because we have to watch things happen to our grandchildren, but because we have to watch our children, whom we swore to protect, go through it. And there's nothing you can do about it. How many of you grandparents have sat on the sidelines and wished for nothing more than for your child to tag you in? Just tag me in. Let me carry the load. And all of you have discovered you cannot stop it. And that's why I think Jesus' words are so hard. Because Jesus says this is just the beginning. You cannot stop it. I watched this man just want to be tagged in. Just, here you go, son, you stay out here, I'll go in there and I'll take all the pain. Can't do that. No matter how much Bible you know, none of us knows how this is going to work out in the end. And this is really harsh reality. Remember those Sadducees who did the Snow White thing? They didn't say Snow White, but you know what I'm saying? You know what Jesus told them? You guys don't know beans about the Bible. Yeah. They came to him and they said, have you read in Scripture in Exodus when if you read in the law where Moses said this? And Jesus looks at these people who have a degree in Bible and he says, you guys know squat about the text. How's that? And the reason they know nothing about the text is because they're trying to make sense of something that they really have no business trying to make sense of. They're just using pieces. I don't know if any of you remember the name John Antioco. But in 2000, John Antioco was the CEO of a $4.5 billion company. The year 2000, this is 18 years ago, he is the CEO of a $4.5 billion, with a B, dollar company. And in January of the year 2000, a CEO from another fledgling dot-com company, the little bitty, company that's almost floundering, came down to see John Antioco in Dallas. And the little bitty guy wanted to broker a deal with Antioco. And he said, we should be partners. And Antiochus said, it was like I was talking to a gnat. He said, I knew my company was $4.5 billion the year before, and we had nothing but even higher skies to get. And this guy shows up at my doorstep thinking that he and I should be partners. He said, I laughed him out of the building. The little bitty guy from the fledging.com company, that company was Netflix. John Antiochus' $4.5 billion behemoth, Blockbuster. Anybody seen a Blockbuster video store lately? Anybody still got their Blockbuster card? Anybody ever had their credit messed up because you still had a video out from 2 years ago? Yep. And I read this article about Antiochus and Netflix, and he said they argued back and forth over DVDs. And I got to thinking, I don't even have a DVD player anymore. You know, they were arguing about something that won't even be around anymore. How many times have you argued over something that didn't matter in the first place? How many times have you made plans about something that never came to fruition anyways? How many times have you stressed about a diagnosis that never came? Or how many times have you made a solution to a problem that you can never find a solution for? Church, how much time do we waste? How much do we stress? How much sleep have we lost over things that do not matter and things we cannot change? A lot. I think Jesus would tell us, there's nothing you can do about it. So here's what in chapter 24, in this text that Ryder read, I think he's trying to sum it all up for us. I think it's what he's trying to do. Look at verse 38 of chapter 24. He said, in the days before the flood of Noah, people were eating, they're drinking, they're marrying, and they're giving in marriage. We got a big flood coming, and do you know what everybody's doing? What we always do, just living, eating, drinking, marrying, giving in marriage. That's just what they're doing. That phrase, marrying and giving in marriage, was back in that Sadducee question in chapter 22. That same phrase. People were marrying and giving in marriage. That means we're just living life. Marrying, giving in marriage, eating, we're drinking. I think Jesus is telling us, no matter what's coming, the only thing you can do is live. And here's the second thing. You can't control anybody. Verses 40 and 41, people always take these verses as the rapture verses. You know, you go in the field and there's one woman there and there's two and then one's just gone. There's two people working, one's just gone. What I think Jesus is trying to tell you is that none of us really know for sure anything. All of a sudden, one person went to heaven and one person went, and most of us would probably think, never thought he'd go. And the other guy, we thought, I was sure he was going. You can't control anything. Only the Father knows. Church, your faith does not depend on your power. I want to read to you four verses that speak about power. Power. The first one is Romans chapter 1, verse 4. Because in talking about the resurrection, the Sadducees thought they knew, and they gave him that whole Snow White scene. And I kind of laugh at that because you know how many people I've heard talk about the resurrection? Let me just ask y'all, when Jesus comes back, what are we all going to look like? What's heaven going to look like? I heard a preacher gave a 7-sermon series on heaven. I'm thinking I would run out of material after the first. Church, there ain't that. We know more about hell than we do about heaven. We don't know that much about heaven. Some of you have even asked, I'd like to have a series on heaven. Find me some texts. We don't have that much. I can't even come up with enough stories to fill two lessons on heaven. We just don't know that much. And yet, to so many Christians, that is the crux of our whole faith. Everything we think about has to do with whether we're going to heaven. I think we should, but there's more to faith than thinking about heaven. It causes us to say some stupid stuff. Wonder what heaven's going to be like. When I get to heaven, will I still have my tattoos? Which body will I have? Can we choose? I like my 18-year-old body. I think I've shrunk since I got to be almost 40. I'm pretty sure I was an inch taller. I want that one. Right? What will we look like? How will we act? Does anybody else think these questions are almost ridiculous? I think that's the point. The power of the resurrection isn't when we're going to come back or when Jesus is going to come back. The power of the resurrection is that we will be raised. Romans chapter 1, verse 4, Jesus Christ, the Spirit of holiness, was appointed the Son of God in power by the resurrection from the dead. In Philippians chapter 3, verse 10, Paul says, I want to know Christ. I want to know the power of his resurrection. And I want to participate in his sufferings. Philippians chapter 3, verse 21, Paul says, our citizenship is in heaven, and we eagerly await a Savior from there, the Lord Jesus Christ, who, by the power that enables him to bring everything under his control, will transform our lowly bodies. And finally, Revelation chapter 20, verse 6. Blessed and holy are those who share in the first resurrection, because the second death has no power over them. Church, I think we need to get some bigger dreams. I think we need to dream bigger. I think we need to think larger. I think we shouldn't be so controlled by shiny things. And second, I think when we start to have these bigger dreams, at the end of the day, you can't control it. And a lot of us here this morning are really upset and or stressed and or preoccupied with things that you cannot stop and things you cannot control. I will tell you, you will waste hours and days of your life worrying about things that you nor I know. And it's going to happen anyway. Hurricanes are going to do what hurricanes do. Dead cells are going to do what dead cells do. Kids are going to do what kids do. The earth is going to move. Now, I'm not saying we just, as Solomon says, well, let's just eat, drink, and have a party then if we can't stop anything. But I think even the Bible testifies to the fact that you can't control it. If you ever read the book of Proverbs, Proverbs is full of really good advice. I think I've preached on Proverbs at least 6 times this year. Proverbs is full of great advice. And over, the writer of Proverbs says, if you'll listen to me and do what I say, you'll live and have a good life. Listen to me. Trust me. I know it, and it does. But when you get to the book of Ecclesiastes and Job, you know what the message of those two books are? We tried it too. Trust me, it doesn't work. So Proverbs says, trust me, it works. And the next two wisdom books say, trust me, it doesn't. You still die. No matter how many promotions you get, the guy who comes in late will still get the job before you do. It's not funny. It's life. And all that is a message for you to understand you don't get to control anything. Even the text. A lot of us really want to control this, and you can't do that either. This morning, if you think you've made it, you have arrived, I assure you, you're not done. This morning, if you think it's all over, I assure you, God's not done. And this morning, if you're trying to control everything, if you feel like you're losing control, I assure you, you never had it. So why don't we instead trust the one who does and trust the one who will be there in the end for us, no matter how we turn out. If we can help you with that trust, won't you come all together?